Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault. This week, we welcome KPFK's Julio Martinez for the fourth annual Julio's Holiday Special. This year, Julio and the Arts and Review players that have been with us all 4 years looks at the origins of Santa Claus. Julio Martinez began a long relationship with Pacifica Radio in 1967 when he partnered with Pacifica's flagship station, KPFA in Berkeley. Julio has since moved to Los Angeles and now hosts a show called Arts and Review on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. And now we present To All a Good Night, the story of Santa Claus, a radio play written by Julio Martinez, presented on From the Vault.
What's it, dear?
Mrs. Claus, we have reached a momentous moment in world history.
Oh, you've decided to stop bellowing ho, ho, ho at 3 a.m.? That is momentous. I've got to finish mending your hat. I don't know how I will ever get out of this.
Forget the hat. Mrs. Claus, just a moment ago, the Earth reached a population of 7 billion souls.
Oh, dear. And how many of them are children?
Over half, I suppose. I'll have to check the list. 1, 2, 3,
the list,
four,
the list is the size of Rhode Island. Santa, how much longer can you keep this up? Those poor little elves, they are exhausted. And don't you even get me started on the reindeer. I just don't know how...
My dear Mrs. Claus, you know as well as I do. As long as children believe, there will always be a Santa Claus.
Well, it is just unfair. Back in the 4th century, when that Bishop Nicholas of Smyrna started this whole thing, I'll bet that he didn't have such a workload. How many people were there back then?
480? About 200 million? But Nicholas of Smyrna had many duties and responsibilities as the bishop of a newly founded church, and he had only one helper, who at times could be most disagreeable.
Thaddeus!
What? What do you want?
I need you in here.
Look, either I can get these purses done or I can chat with you. What's it gonna be?
The purses. Yes. For my friend Titus' 4 daughters. How many gold pieces did you put in each purse?
20. 20 for the tall daughter, 20 for the short daughter, 20 for the stout daughter, and 20 for the daughter who sounds like a scalded cat when she talks. 80 pieces of gold out of your own personal funds. And for what?
Dowries. Titus has known difficult times, and his older daughters are all of marrying age. Without dowries, they'll never find suitable mates.
Hooray for Titus! He rids himself of 4 daughters, and you're out 80 pieces of gold.
My bounty is plenty. And at this time of year, I find joy in giving.
Joy in giving? You're the softest touch in Smyrna. The whole town knows it.
It makes me happy, Thaddeus. Oh, the bags of treats for Titus' younger children, are they prepared as well?
Are they prepared? Oh, my, are they prepared?
What are you going on about?
Your bishopness, you're going to love this, okay? You told the kitchen staff you would give them each a small measure of grain for their personal use, for every bag of sweets they wrapped, right?
Bags of dates and nuts. Yes. So, did they do it?
Did they do it? I just finished counting how many bags of treats they did do.
How many?
355. You do not have a measure of grain left in your bin. And there's not a date or nut left in Smyrna. What are you going to do with 355 bags of treats?
355 bags... 300.
Why are you pacing around the room? Titus only has 5 little tots, and you're stuck with 350 bags.
Thaddeus, put all the treats in that large canvas sack we keep by the fireplace, and have my carriage brought to the front of the rectory.
What are you gonna do?
After we deliver the purses and treats to Titus, we are going to visit the homes of the poorest children in Smyrna. We are going to place a bag of treats by each door. They'll never know who brought them.
Are you kidding? They'll know it's you. Who else would do it? And then they'll expect it next year. And the next, and then, of course, the next.
And we'll do it at this time every year. If ever I am to have any legacy at all, I want it to be the spirit of giving. and making children happy. All children.
Legacy? What legacy? Oh, look, I'm sure everyone will praise you, call you St. Nicholas or whatever, but believe me, after you're gone, the people will forget. They always do.
La 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 la.
Santa.
Tis the season to be jolly.
Santa.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Claus.
Oh, you do 16th century Welsh carols really well, my dear. But I think I kind of like the more recent songs. Songs that actually honor you.
Actually, the spirit of St. Nicholas journeyed through many other worthy souls before I came into being.
Oh, there weren't that many. Let's see. The Saxons had King Frost, and the Vikings had Odin.
And German children waited for Christ Kindlein, and in France there was Père Noël. English children honored Father Christmas, and the Dutch settlers brought Sinterklaas to America.
And now there was a jolly old soul. He could really down a pint. I mean, he could...
Yeah, yes, dear. But the spirit of Christmas almost disappeared altogether in the 17th century.
Oh, you mean the Puritans.
Can you believe in 1647 the Puritans forced Parliament to abolish the celebration of Christmas and Easter in England and the colonies?
Sir... Will you please attend to me, sir?
You talking to me?
You are the only person standing there.
Then you are talking to me. What do you want?
I have been told that your bishop is away, and that I must talk to the deacon of this church.
That's me, Thaddeus. I come from a long line of deacons. We go way back. You looking to marry off your daughter? You can't do better than St. Sebastian's, finest church in Boston.
I do not recognize saints, sir. I am John Winthrop, Puritan governor of Massachusetts Bay Company. And I have a proclamation I want read by your bishop at services and posted for all your parishioners to see.
Now, they can see it, but most won't be able to read it. What's it say?
Now, this proclamation is to take effect immediately in every one of the British colonies in North America. Forasmuch as the Feast of the Nativity of Christ, Easter, and other festivals, commonly called holy days, have been heretofore superstitiously used and observed, be it ordained that said feasts and all other festivals, commonly called holy days, be no longer observed as festivals. There is no day commanded in Scripture to be kept holy under the gospel but the Lord's Day, which is the Christian Sabbath. Festival days, vulgarly called holy days, having no warrant in the word of God, are not to be continued.
That's it?
I think the proclamation is perfectly clear.
No celebration of Christmas?
Correct.
No Christmas Eve cheer, no wassail?
Decidedly not.
And no presents for the little ones on Christmas morning?
It is totally unwarranted.
Governor, good luck with that.
I know the spirit of Christmas suffered for a while, but by the beginning of the 19th century, you appeared, my dear.
Well, I certainly didn't look like I do now.
Yes, you were a bit undernourished.
I just wasn't fleshed out yet. But that writer, Washington Irving, and his publisher, John Pintard, let the people know I was around.
Mother, Father... Do I have to go to bed just yet?
Louise, all through dinner, you have bombarded Mr. Irving with your questions.
She is delightful. I have never had such a charming and knowledgeable inquisitor.
Oh, she has read and reread your book since it first came out last year.
It's so funny. And your Christmas stories? They're my favorite.
And it is now Christmas Eve. Off to bed with you.
Good night, Mother. Good night, Father. Good night, Mr. Irving.
Mrs. Pintard, it is such an enjoyable honor to spend Christmas Eve in your home. Thank you for inviting me to supper.
It is our pleasure, Mr. Irving, and it is my honor to meet the man responsible for bringing so much joy to this season.
Your husband John deserves most of the credit. He was the one who encouraged me to write Knickerbocker's History of New York and then pay to have it published.
And worth every dollar. I just wish you had used your own name. Then Washington Irving, instead of your nom de plume, Dietrich Knickerbocker, would be renowned for immortalizing our daughter's most beloved spirit of Christmas.
Spirit of Christmas? Now who would that be?
You know very well who we mean. When I was a little girl, we all revered St. Nicholas as this saintly figure who watched over little children and brought them treats at Christmas time. But he was distant, ethereal. Where did this Santa Claus of yours come from?
Actually, right here in New York, from the original Dutch settlers. Their name for St. Nicholas was Sinterklaas. I just Americanized it. And when I thought about him, this image came to mind of a jolly, rotund Dutch burgher with a clay pipe.
Whose horse and wagon can fly to rooftops so they can come down chimneys to bring gifts and fill children's stockings hanging at the fireplace.
Mr. Irving, please tell me we will read more of this jolly man and his sack of treats for all good children.
Well, actually, my dear, Mr. Irving did not just come by this evening to enjoy your excellently prepared Christmas Eve supper. The 1809 publishing of Knickerbocker's History of New York was so popular, we've decided to republish it. But the 1810 edition will include a new Dietrich Knickerbocker poem featuring your favorite character.
Oh, do you have it with you? Will you read it, please?
I do have it with me, but I do not feel my voice would do it justice. It should be read by a woman, as if reading to her child. Mrs. Pintard, would you do me the honor?
It would be my pleasure, Mr. Irving. O good holy man, whom we Santa Claus name, the nursery forever your praise shall proclaim. The day of your joyful revisit returns, when each little bosom with gratitude burns, for the gifts which at night you so kindly impart to the girls of your love and the boys of your heart. Oh, come with your panniers and pockets well stowed. Our stockings shall help you to lighten your load. As close to the fireside gaily they swing, while delighted we dream of the presents you bring. Oh, bring the bright orange, so juicy and sweet. Bring almonds and raisins to heighten the treat. Rich waffles and donuts must not be forgot, nor crullers and ole cooks fresh from the pot. But of all these fine presents your saintship can find, oh, leave not the famous big cookies behind. Or if in your hurry one thing you mislay, let that be the rod, and oh, keep it away. Then holy Saint Nicholas all the year, our books we will love and our parents revere. From naughty behavior we'll always refrain, in hopes that you'll come and reward us again.
Oh, what a lovely thought.
It is a beautiful poem.
I'm referring to Santa's wagon drawn by just one horse, instead of that herd of reindeer the elves and I have to tend to.
My dear, Washington Irving's vision of me became so popular he was bound to inspire other writers. That's how I became who I am today.
Well, that college professor Clement Clark Moore became a little too inspired when he decided to turn your wagon into a sleigh and had 8 flying reindeer pulling it. He even named them.
My dear, 'twas the night before Christmas is a classic, an utter classic.
I know, dear, but does it always have to sound like it was written in 1823?
What do you mean?
Well, the elves and I have come up with a rendition that we feel is more in keeping with the modern times.
You haven't changed the poem, have you?
Oh, no, dear. We have just added a bit of a beat to it.
'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mom in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rabbit than eagles, his curses they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop, the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my hand and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night. Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Well, that is the fastest version I've ever heard.
We're all living in swifter time, Santa, all 7 billion of us.
7 billion and 18. It makes me appreciate the attention to Christmas that was given as America was growing. And I must credit that amazing artist, Thomas Nast, who finally created the lasting image of me in his illustrations for Harper's Magazine during the 1860s.
But did he have to add such details as Santa's workshop being at the North Pole? And Santa's list of the good and bad children, which, as I've told you before...
it's as big as Rhode Island. Yeah, I know.
Well, his illustrations were inspirational. It was one of Nast's images of you that young Virginia O'Hanlon had on her wall when she wrote her letter to the New York Sun in 1897. And it was reporter Francis P. Church's editorial reply that carried your presence into the 20th century.
Dear editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there's no Santa Claus. Papa says if you see it in the sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Virginia O'Hanlon.
Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except that which they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia. There is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The external light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus. You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if you did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus. But that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's no proof that they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are, unseen and unseeable in the world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside. But there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real Ah, Virginia. In all this world, there is nothing else more real than abiding. No Santa Claus. Thank God he lives and lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. Your humble servant, Francis P. Church.
The 20th century was so difficult. I'm so glad that we're beyond it. The industrialization, the wars, the unrelenting grasping for wealth, truth and goodness, they seemed to disappear and life became one big advertising campaign.
Oh, I like the holiday ads, the funny jingles. You are certainly prominent.
Prominent? It turned me into a huckster.
Well, I didn't mind the Coca-Cola illustrations of you created by that lovely artist, Haddon Sundblom, in 1931. And he made you life-sized. Before that, you were the size of one of your elves. He turned you into the fine, robust figure that you are today.
That's true. But you weren't happy at all with the holiday ad campaign the Montgomery Ward Company put out in 1939.
Oh, of course I wasn't happy. It was hard enough dealing with 8 self-centered reindeer. Then that wet-behind-his-ears ad writer Robert L. May had to create a 9th.
Silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city.
Robert? Robert, where are you going?
I am done. The Montgomery Ward campaign is ready to go. I'm headed for Pete's Tavern. All the copywriters are meeting there. Get your coat, let's go.
I can't go anywhere, and neither can you. We're not finished yet.
I am. The ad copy has been written, edited, and approved. The art's been okayed. It's all being shipped to the printer in the morning. The only thing we're waiting on is the coloring book that Montgomery Ward selects every year to give away at the stores. And that is not our department.
It is now. The store has decided that purchasing coloring books is too expensive. They want to create their own.
And have it ready to ship to the printer by tomorrow? Who's the poor soul idiot who's going to write it?
You.
What? No.
And I'm the poor soul idiot who has to illustrate it. So, if you want to keep our jobs during these depression times, we better get to work.
Oh, boy. All right. You have to do the illustrations, so what are you good at drawing?
Robert, I am a great illustrator. I can draw anything. Although I have had a lot of practice lately doing reindeer. Lots of reindeer.
Fine. The lead character is going to be one of Santa's reindeer.
Which one?
Let's be creative. We'll invent a new one. Its name should start with an R to go along with reindeer. How about Rollo the reindeer?
I don't think so. How about Reginald?
Too hoity-toity. Maybe Rudolph.
Actually, I have an uncle named Rudolph. What a boozer. When he gets drunk, his nose turns so bright red, I swear he could find his way out of a darkened room.
Hilarious. Get serious. We have to find a plot for this. Whoa, 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 whoa. Nose so bright.
What's wrong?
Violet, get out your sketch pad. We've got our coloring book.
You know Dasher
and Dancer
and Prancer
and Vixen,
Comet
and Cupid
and Donner
and Blitzen.
But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny.
Rudolph has become so popular over the years. A book, a hit song, TV, movies.
My dear, he's become a superstar.
And don't he know it. He thinks he's king of the stable. Okay, folks, we ready to go here? Everything is on the sleigh and the reindeer are pointed due south.
Thaddeus, you've been a part of this from the very beginning.
Yeah, well, without me around, they turn Christmas into a nap. Now, let's get this show on the road.
Well, dear, I'm off. I will return by dawn.
And as always, I will make my toddy, play my favorite music, and wait for your return.
And a Merry Christmas to all. Ho, ho, ho!
Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town.
To All a Good Night, the story of Santa Claus was written by Julio Martinez, directed by Irene Aranga, and produced by Mark Torres.
The Arts and Review repertory players featured Richard Heft as Santa.
Carol Klein as Mrs. Claus.
Richard M. Johnson as Thaddeus.
Jim Hardy as Bishop Nicholas of Smyrna. And David Hayworth as Governor John Winthrop.
Nicholas Reed as Washington Irving. Linnea Lou Dakin as Elizabeth Pintard. Ed Krieger as John Pintard. And Kayla Kalish as Louise Pintard.
Emma Moore as Virginia O'Hanlon. And Allaloo as Francis P. Church.
Cullen Kirkland as Robert L. May. And Lauren Lewis as Violet.
On behalf of KPFK, Pacifica Radio for Southern California, Merry Christmas to all.
And to all a good night.
You the new butler?
Well, it's been a long time since I've been the new anything.
What's happened to Hudson?
I guess he's changing.
Yeah, he does that a lot, doesn't he? Oh, I'm David Bowie. I live down the road.
Oh.
Sir Percival lets me use his piano when he's not around. He's not around, is he?
I can honestly say I haven't seen him, but come on in.
Come in.
But, come on in.
Are you related to Sir Percival?
Well, distantly, yeah.
Oh, you're not the poor relation from America, right?
Gee, news sure travels fast, doesn't it? I'm Bing.
Oh, I'm pleased to meet you. You're the one that sings, right?
Well, right or wrong, I sing either way.
Oh, well, I sing too.
Oh, good. What kind of singing?
Well, mostly the contemporary stuff. Do you like modern music?
Oh, I think it's marvelous. Some of it really fine. But tell me, you ever listen to any of the older fellas?
Oh, yeah, sure. I like John Lennon and the other one with Harry Nilsson.
Ooh, you go back that far, huh?
Oh, yeah, I'm not as young as I look.
None of us is these days.
In fact, I've got a 6-year-old son, and he really gets excited around the Christmas holiday thing.
Do you go in for any of the traditional things in the Bowie household Christmas time?
Oh, yeah, most of them, really. Presents, tree, decorations, agents sliding down the chimney.
What?
I was just seeing if you're paying attention. Actually, our family do most of the things that other families do. We sing the same songs.
Do you?
I even have a go at White Christmas.
You do, huh?
And this one. This is my son's favorite. Do you know this one?
Oh, I do indeed. It's a lovely thing.
To see ba-rum-pa-bum-bum. Our finest gifts we bring ba-rum-pa-bum-bum, rum-pa-bum-bum, rum-pa-bum-bum.
Peace on earth, can it be? And years from now, perhaps we'll see.
Our
see the day
we bring
of glory.
See the day
when living peace again.
So
peace on earth
when we come. Every child must be made aware. Every child must be made to care. Care enough for his fellow man to give all the love that he can.
I pray my wish will come true.
It's
for my child and your child too.
He'll
see the day of glory.
I pray my
day
for him
when men of goodwill live in peace. again and peace on earth. Can it be? Can it be?
It's a pretty thing, isn't it?